Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar and on Twitter at cflarbigcats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve. This week, we're going to continue our discussion of big cat, little cat.
Wonderful. What's the first question?
If little cats evolved from wild cats, why are some of them not suited for living outside? Well, of course, part of that question is because our breeding habits have changed. It's not so much that the cats have evolved. We've actually had a bigger hand in that as humans breeding the cats.
And, of course, we also modify many cats that are considered domesticated, whereby if they no longer have their claws, that's one of the major tools that they need to survive.
And also, it's a little more dangerous for cats to be outside with cars and all of that. Also, as we mentioned last week, there's the whole concept of the cats going off and eating other birds and mammals that are indigenous to the area, and thus making them invasive species. So there are a lot of reasons why you don't necessarily want the house cats to be out and just living amongst the wild.
Right, right. And let's not forget that the potential for disease is very prevalent as well. The wild population, of course, will have native diseases and parasites that they carry. But by introducing cats to that, cats more often will interface with human society and sometimes get deeper into it than some of the other wild animals, and then that manner they can become a vector for certain diseases that we really don't want to have around.
Well, that's actually one of our questions, so why don't we go to that next?
All right.
What kind of diseases do the cats carry?
It depends, of course, on whether or not they are indoor or outdoor cats. Indoor cats are susceptible to far fewer diseases because they aren't living in a parasite-rich environment that is the outdoor living. Generally speaking, the cats can have diseases that are specific to them, but can also carry some diseases that can be dangerous for people as well.
Do you have examples of any of those?
It has to do a lot with the bacteria that they may have on their bodies. Because they've got four paws on the ground, it means that their paws are going to be exposed to tetanus. And, of course, also toxoplasmosis is another special kind of bacteria that they can get. The common disease called cat scratch fever is actually a form of Bartonella disease that's carried, and people can get that by being scratched by a cat. Even though other creatures do carry this, that's usually the classic presentation.
What is cat scratch fever for a human?
Well, it can be a very interesting song. one of the challenges behind cat scratch fever is that for cats, because they're native carriers, they may not show any signs or symptoms whatsoever. However, for humans, it can be transmitted by, of course, a scratch or having the saliva of an infected cat go into the wound. But the common symptoms will generally be some kind of bump or blister where the cat has bitten or scratched a person. Because of the way that it travels, it will cause the lymph nodes to swell and make somebody feel pretty bad. They'll get tired and have headaches and generally have a low-grade fever.
So is it kind of an antibiotic-type treatment thing?
Something that, do you mean to treat?
Yeah. Yes.
Generally speaking, it's something that, you know, people who need to get it would be someone who has immune compromise. If someone has HIV/AIDS or is undergoing chemotherapy, for example, those would be people that would need to have antibiotics. But generally speaking, it doesn't require treatment. It's something that is self-limiting and goes away.
there any other interesting diseases that we should be aware of with our cats?
So yes, actually, one of the conditions that's being tracked very actively right now is something called Toxocara cati. It's a parasite of cats and other felids. It looks like a roundworm, and it's something that, generally speaking, can be carried by cats, especially feral cats that are out there. Now, this particular bug can be transmitted to people. What ends up happening is that the worm ends up being dislodged from the gastrointestinal tract and coming out in fecal matter. So cats that are wild, that are defecating in human areas, can actually leave these eggs, and they can be living for up to 3 to 4 weeks after coming out. So that means that if somebody has contact with the feces, whether that be walking through those areas and getting them on shoes and then improperly washing hands, then it can actually be transmitted to people.
And it becomes an intestinal type of problem?
Yes, it actually becomes a form of roundworm.
How do you treat something like that?
Well, fortunately, we do have what they call antithelemics, which can be treating humans for that. But it's one of those situations where you don't want to end up with this condition because, you know, who wants worms, for one? And you
guess
know,
I'll go eat worms.
Yeah, you. It's hard to live that down. It can be a real challenge for people who are in those areas to make sure that they do wash their hands well and realize that cats can be native carriers of this.
So what about the big cats? We've talked a little bit about what some of the diseases and issues that maybe come from the little cats. What about the big guys?
Well, as many vets will say, big cats, in many ways, the treatment modalities are very similar to little cats, except that everything has to be scaled up. With the big guys, it can become challenging because there's not that same large body of knowledge of treating them than there is with treating the little cats. You can go to just about any vet that says they specialize in cats, and they may have done hundreds of little cats in the course of a short course of their career, whereas people who deal with big cats, doing hundreds of big cats is something that's a little bit more of a challenge to find someone with that kind of expertise.
So do the big cats get cat scratch fever, for example?
Generally, they don't. And if they do, then it would be basically invisible to us. They can, of course, carry the bacteria. They do get worms. You know, they do have to be wormed to worry about flatworms as well as roundworms. Unlike the domestic cat, big cats, generally speaking, are going to be outdoor cats.
And I would say so.
And so as outdoor cats, they're going to be living in a parasite-rich environment. Also, because of their defecation habits and the difference between the two species, there may be more contact with fecal matter than with the little cats.
Well, now that we've brought up the subject, one of our questions is, why do cats cover their poop? Well, I do have some answers in regard for the domestic cats. It is part of their instinct to cover their poop. Part of it is so that they don't attract attention from other predators. And also, because they're the smaller submissive cats, it's to show submissiveness and that the other bigger dominant cats don't bother them that way, in that kind of way, for the small cats. One of the things in a domestic cat, if a cat is covering up their poop with their litter, that actually shows you as their owner being the alpha in the house, because they're covering up their poop to be submissive to you in some regard as well. And in normal households, even if there's multiple cats, you know, they'll all cover up their poop either in litter boxes or in the garden. If a cat doesn't cover up its poop, that may actually be a sign that that cat is not feeling submissive to you and is feeling more to be the alpha in the household. That could be a sign of that. But it also could be that the cat is ill and is not feeling well, because that also happens in some cases as well. So there's all kinds of reasons why cats cover their poop. It's not just a gotta be clean kind of thing. It has all to do with the instincts of, like I said, being submissive and covering up their tracks, and in some cases also to make sure that the scent is there that marks their territory. But usually cases where cats are trying to mark their territory, they wouldn't cover their poop because they want it to be available to be smelled and sensed and all of that. So I'm sure there's some similar aspects of that to the big cats.
Yeah, actually, a lot of behaviors that are similar there. The cougars are the most notorious for poop covering, which in some ways makes it easy to find their poop. You just look for the mound, as it were, and then you dig for buried treasure. They tend to cover their poop, which, you know, them being a lot closer to the domestic cat side of the world makes some sense. With regards to the bigger cats, a lot of them will actually just leave it where it lies. And poop is, of course, a very, very powerful messaging symbol in the animal kingdom. It's one of those internal to external message signals that can be used to determine an awful lot about the status of another species. So just like your pee mail discussion from before, the poop mail, so to speak, can also tell other cats a lot about what's going on. For yet another use, some cats actually use their poop as their own kind of special cologne. Lions have certainly been known to roll around in feces to attain a stronger scent. Mixing with the oils of their own body, that can produce some very powerful smells. And when you live in a scent-rich environment, as many of them do, that can be extremely important.
So the question being, to them, that smells good, obviously.
Well, just because they do it, it may not necessarily smell good. I know plenty of cats that seem to turn their nose up at their own feces after they've done it. And not in the Fleming response, where they're trying to taste the air, but truly in that avoidance where they are trying to say, this is something nasty, I want to be away from it. That seems to be the general response that they'll get.
But yet, you say some of them will roll in it. That's interesting.
Right. It may be that the ends justify the means there. You know, if they need to have a big presence and really show that they're dominant, then they're going to want to have a big dominant scent.
So in general, earlier I'd mentioned the fact that the more submissive cats will cover the poop so as not to attract attention from predators or from the dominant species, and the more dominant ones would not cover their poop. Is that kind of fall into line with the big cats that way as well then?
It sounds reasonable that it would. And certainly, poop can be not just a powerful signal between cats, but also a powerful signal between prey animals. In fact, there was some research that was going into the utilization of cougar poop and the poop from other big cats as animal repellent, deer repellent specifically.
I guess that could work. You know, deers are going to be sensitive to that smell, I'm sure.
Exactly. Something in that says, whoa, big predator, let's not go there. So when people want to keep deer out of their lawn, then they actually use feces from various big cat species. And depending on the area that you're in, the efficacy will change.
And also, I mentioned earlier that the domestic cats cover their poop also as a way to hide from predators that might eat them. Well, even though they're in your house and there aren't any predators or likely to be any predators there, you know, the little cat doesn't know that. So it's still making sure everything's tidy and good, right?
Our discussion on big cat, little cat takes... Discussion on Big Cat, Little Cat on CIFAR Sounding.
Are cats really more independent than dogs?
Good question.
Well, it's interesting because by behavior we can say, yes, that's true. You know, for those of us that are dog owners and those of us that have seen cats or have been cat owners, you can see that in just our reactions to them. But part of that, it's just instinct as well. Dogs live in packs. They're more social creatures in general and need that attention with each other. And when you're living with a dog, you're part of that dog's pack. So they want that attention. They need to be around you and be social. Cats in general don't have that same level of social capability or social instinct. They do tend to be a little bit more independent.
And it seems that their independence is not necessarily related just to that social hierarchy, but whether or not they include others in that social hierarchy. Dogs will readily include people as part of their pack. You know, we talk about dog owners saying that they have to make sure that they stay the alpha in their family because the dog will recognize that and behave accordingly. However, with cats, there does seem to be less of an understanding of alpha, beta, where they stand, as much as it is whoever has got the more dominant pose at that time. And it's fluid. As a dog owner, you'd have to tell me, do you find that the pack structure is fluid, or once that hierarchy is established, is it basically stuck?
It's more in that realm that it's more consistent.
More consistent over time, whereas cats can move in and out of dominance depending on the situation. For example, a cat can do something called go in possession of an item. And this is something that goes from little cats as well as big cats. If you've ever had a cat that has something in their possession and they don't want you to take it from them, they can become quite threatening very quickly. And big cats do it, little cats do it. Another cat is going to be warned off by this display. Whereas in canine pack structure, those that would be dominant would just take it, and the ones that would be submissive would be expected to relinquish it.
And that's actually true, even of my dog. Like, for example, when she's got food down, if there's something in there that I need to grab or take out, I reach and grab it. She doesn't growl at me or anything like that. But if another dog is over and gets anywhere near her food, boy, she growls like crazy at him. So there's a definite structure there of who's allowed to take something from her and who's not.
And this concept of independence does not necessarily mean that they're solitary or they're ornery or that they don't want any other creatures around, because feral cats that live in colonies seem to do better than cats that are going to be out there on their own. They do seem to recognize a certain amount of strength in numbers, but it's more of a relationship of convenience versus any true social structure.
So that's more of a loose coalition, right?
Yes. And interestingly enough, in the wild, the famous studies that have been done on lions and lions' prides show that the pride is also a lot more fluid than was originally believed. It's not just a group of 15 to 30 lions that are roaming the savanna all by themselves or as a collective group, and they, you know, stay very close. Sometimes pride members separate off. They can go miles from the pride for a period of time and then come back to the pride and reintegrate. In that manner, they may behave independently for a short time, but still be as part of that unit.
So even with the pride, the social connections are more fluid. I actually didn't know that.
And it gets more interesting when you look at tigers, for example. Tigers have been shown to have overlapping territory with members of their own family, where family members may share hunting grounds, or in some cases, there's been tales of male tigers leaving kills for females and cubs to find, whereby they may not all be seen together or really even cohabitate, but there is acknowledgement of who else is in that area, and they tend to stay close even if they aren't necessarily working together or even as a family unit.
So that's more of a non-social behavior, more independent.
It's independent, but it's not solitary in the same way that one might think of a leopard, for example. I'm out here on my own, I do my thing, I go where I need to go, that's it. The tiger will end up having some overlap and may even have some role in assisting tigers that are part of that land coalition.
So what about the cougars? How do they deal with that?
Cougars are generally pretty solitary in the truest sense of the word. And part of that is going to be due to the kinds of creatures that they have to hunt and where they have to hunt. Cougars are not generally going to be open foliage creatures. They're not really very good in open plains, whereas they can be very stealthy in and amongst mountains, in forests, and wherever their prey animals happen to be. They tend to be by themselves for the most part. Mothers raising kittens, certainly you'll see those together, but the kittens will eventually wander off and just keep doing their thing.
So it seems like there's some variability amongst the cat realm as to solitary and social behavior.
Generally speaking, though, if it is seen to be of benefit to them and of comfort to them, then they will continue to engage something. If it is not comfortable or not providing them the degree of stimulation that they want, they will be perfectly fine going to do their own thing.
Yes, it's interesting because obviously there are many people that own more than one cat, and those cats... But I've had friends that have had more than one cat, and they do talk about how in some cases the cats get along great together, and in some cases they actually have to keep the cats separated in different parts of the house.
You know, there's a reason why cat fights are not pretty.
Is there a scientific explanation for the random slash weird behaviors that the cats possess? And also, why does a loving cat seem to sometimes attack their owner unprovoked? Now, again, these are both questions that were given to us by others. So I called this the soapbox question. So take it away, Mr. Simba.
Oh, boy. Okay. So the first thing that I would say is that, generally speaking, cats are not 100% random. Cats have a extraordinarily subtle and very full internal life, which to them creates rational decisions. Now, there are sometimes some very obvious questions and that you have to ask. So for a cat, there are going to be a number of stimuli that can be in their environment that are going to be perceived completely different for them than are going to be perceived for us. So if you are a small cat, you may not even come up to the knee of your owner. So everything in the world is going to be a little bit bigger, and especially because cats tend to be independent, it's easy for people to sometimes forget about the way something may appear to the cat. So fear is actually one of the biggest reasons why a cat may choose to attack, and it could be something that you're doing in a manner that you didn't realize it. Let's say that you've got a cat that is laying on their side and they're completely relaxed, and you walk up to the cat and you lean over as if you're going to pet. Now, if the cat is in a state of semi-consciousness, they may not necessarily see that as, okay, my person is coming over to pet me. Latent instincts may say that this big giant creature is looming over me and getting ready to make contact, and that can be frightening in an instant for the cat and can certainly cause a bit of a negative response. Secondly, is the concept of misdirected anger. This displacement concept is common not just in little cats, but also in big cats, and is one of the major things that we as handlers have to be concerned about, because if a cat can't get angry at something that they can actually do something about, then they will displace that onto what is actually available. So if you've got a cat that is outside watching a bird, for example, and it's got them all fired up because they want that bird and they can't get them, and then you suddenly present a hand, then that can become a convenient target to take care of that that redirected anger. The corollary for big cats might be that if somebody is playing with a palm frond or playing with a toy or doing some kind of activating enrichment activity that does not involve the cat actually getting the item that is being used for enrichment, and then you walk up right afterwards and try to have a contact engagement, they may displace on you because they have all this energy that was not resolved through the activity. Now, of course, those people who work around big cats, we have the benefit of having oftentimes big signals. Because they're big enough and usually confident enough not to be activated by some of those sudden overwhelms, like the looming human scenario I mentioned before, you'll see a lot more of those subtle signals. You can see changes in the eye sizes, changes in the positions of the ears, the body language, the whiskers, all of that stuff is magnified because the big cats are just so much bigger than the little cats. Those same motions shrunk down to little cat size can be extremely difficult for someone to see. And even if they do see them, the lightning fast reflexes of a small cat can be far quicker than a person can actually react. So I guess you were right in somewhat that this is a soapbox question. I don't believe in, I don't believe wholly in the idea of cats being attacking people at random. I think that if anything, there is a perfectly logical explanation that they are not telling us.
So it's seemingly random to us, but certainly not random to the cat.
Certainly. And while this can be a great source of distress for domestic cat owners, I completely understand. But I would also say that it can be a very distressing event if you're dealing with a big cat, and also is something that we take extraordinary measures to try to avoid as best as we can, because the whole concept of turning on someone has been perpetuated as this kind of myth throughout big cats, where suddenly the cat just turned and ate somebody. And usually when you dig deeper, you find out that that's not the case. And you may find out that there may be a pattern that emerged over weeks or months or years that suddenly led up to that. Big cats don't seem to snap any more than people seem to snap. There's usually something that's happening in that mental process that's resulting that negative outcome.
Okay, so if I came to you and I said, why did this cat do this to me? What would you say?
I'd say, you know, I don't know. You can't just go in there and say, you know, oh, the cat bit me, and then turn and say, why did he do that? And expect somebody to say, oh, well, according to the book, it doesn't work that way. You know, you have to conduct an investigation. What were you doing with that cat? Why? What was that cat's position? What were they doing a week ago? What were they doing earlier that day? In order to figure out what a cat's going to actually do in a situation, you need to do a lot of research.
So investigations will ensue.
Investigations will ensue. You have to be a cat detective.
That's right. Well, we're out of time for this week, but we are going to continue with more of these wonderful questions next week. So please tune in to hear more about the comparisons and differences and all the wonderful things between big cats and domestic cats. CFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wills. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding.